Pool days call for cookouts and lots of laundry. This Memorial Day at Lowe's, save $80 on a Charbroil Performance Series 4-Burner Gas Grill. Now just $199. Plus, get up to 45% off select major appliances to keep dishes, clothes, and food fresh. Having fun in the sun is easy with us in your corner. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 5/27. While supplies last, selection varies by location. See associate or Lowe's.com for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Today on The Grave Talks, living with ghosts. Kevin Killen wrote into me, "I'm a well-educated person and want to let people know they don't have to be afraid anymore. Encounters such as these happen." And it's true. The stigma of being haunted by something paranormal no longer has to be looked down upon or ruled that the person is crazy. On today's episode of The Grave Talks, we talk with Kevin about his very haunted life. From unexplained knocking late at night to a dark entity attaching itself to him and almost changing his personality. We also discuss the dark entities that he encounters to this day, lurking around the substance abuse treatment facility that he works in. Is this the story of a man drawn to the paranormal, or possibly the paranormal being drawn to him?
My first encounter that actually kicked all of this stuff off was I was about 5 years old living in Evanston, Illinois. Excuse me. We lived in a really big old house. And my father at the time was a journalist, so he used to go out of town a lot. So he took my other brothers to, I believe it was St. Louis, for a basketball tournament or something. So it was just me and my mother. And we had the downstairs, and we were sitting there in the living room, and we heard footsteps upstairs. And we had, you know, the old wooden hallway in, around by the bedrooms. And I turned to my mother, and I remember saying, who's that? And my mother telling me, oh, that's just my little boy. And the reason she told me much later that that was the only thing she could think of, so she wouldn't scare me. She was scared to death that somebody broke in the house. But she had told me that. And, of course, you know, my little five-year-old mind, okay, well, I'll accept that because I don't know what that meant. But, yeah, so that was my very first experience. It was so distinct that I actually started the book with that.
So you had this experience of these footsteps. Your mom refers to it as my little boy. Is that almost like referring to, like, hey, there's a brother you have up there that you don't know about?
Well, see, the thing with that, I found out later, my mother had a miscarriage in the house.
Sure.
And I didn't know that. So maybe that's, you know, and actually some of the things that I've studied and learned later on is that, some people do believe that they still have a soul, so they never move on. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of interesting because I didn't know that at the time. So, I was supposed to have a brother or a sister after that, but sure. I don't know. She just said that she just did that because it was she couldn't think of anything to not scare me, and figured that would that would do it.
Sure. And as an adult, that's probably the first thing that comes to one's mind is that's what she's referring to. But as a 5-year-old, probably not the first thing that's going through your mind. Did you press her any further? Just kind of accept that's what it was? Or how did things progress in that house?
Yeah, I kind of accepted that. But there were a few more things later on. There was upstairs where we heard the footsteps. There was a little black footprint, and my mother could never get it out. I don't know what it was, but it looked like shoe polish of some sort. But it was too small for anybody in the house. Mm-hmm. So I just remember seeing like little black toes all the time and wondering, well, what the hell is this? You know, because my mother scrubbed it and never came out. So it was just, that was kind of weird. And I had a dream once before we moved that all my stuffed animals walked down the stairs into like the living room area. Mm-hmm. So, that, you know, I don't know what that meant, if anything, but that was just kind of weird as a little kid remembering. I still remember it vividly. That the animals came, you know, walking down the stairs. So,
which could have easily just been a childhood dream. We all have bizarre dreams that don't necessarily link into the paranormal. But when you have paranormal things going on around you, you're a little more sensitive to practically anything that enters your mindscape of the odd or the somewhat paranormal. As you continue to grow up in this house and these occurrences would happen, and as you got older, did your parents ever talk with you, or did you ever talk with them about these odd things that were going on beyond that initial conversation where your mom said it was her little boy?
I tried later on in life. We actually moved from Chicago to Virginia a year or two later from that incident. And we had some things going on in the other house in Virginia. And I tried to talk. My mother was very, I don't know what the word was, but quite vague. She was very vague about these things. And I think, honestly, looking back on things that happened, looking back on the book and everything, I think what had happened with her is she knew more, but she wasn't willing to let on that she knew more. So mm-hmm. She was quite vague throughout my lifetime until she passed that, you know, there were things that went on. I never had a good feeling, that kind of thing, but she never elaborated on it.
So it literally, pardon the pun, but it went to her with her grave as far as what exactly she understood or knew of what was going on with the house. When you move from house to house, did the activity continue?
It did. Not as much in the beginning. Excuse me. I moved to Falls Church, Virginia from Evanston in 76, I believe it was. So there was just little things. And I think a lot of those could be attributed early on to just being a kid, you know, because you're, you know, 8, 9 years old and, you know, everything. And at that time, I used to love going to the library and reading anything on paranormal stuff, mm-hmm. you know, vampires, ghosts, whatever the case may be. So it may have been, you know, just my little mind just getting a little overworked and overstimuli. And back then, I don't know if you probably remember this, Tony, because I think we're fairly close in age. They showed The Exorcist on TV. Mm-hmm. So I actually saw that like in fourth grade. I mean, of course, it was like a local station. They cut a lot of stuff. Sure. But even still, I got the gist of it.
Yeah.
Something I shouldn't have been watching. So that could have been some of it. But the activity did increase as I got older in that house.
As it increased and as you got older and more aware of the concept of ghosts, of what it was all about, were you full on accepting and believing that you are in fact encountering paranormal activity, or were you trying to debunk it? What was going through your mind?
I was just kind of really just like, what is this mm-hmm. kind of thing? And like I said, I'm still a huge fan of Hans Holzer's books. So I'd gotten a lot of his books growing up and found him to be fascinating as a writer. And everything, and some of the things, wondering, you know, hey, is this what's going on here? And then trying to figure out, because again, you try to rationalize this stuff, and the first thing that always comes to your mind is, am I crazy? And I still do that to this day, because it's just sometimes some of the stuff comes out of left field, and you're like, okay, maybe I didn't hear that or see that or whatever the case may be. So yeah, I was kind of rationalizing and trying to figure it all out, like, okay, I know I'm the only one in this room, but why am I hearing footsteps? Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing.
You're saying things amped up as you got a bit older into those teen years in that house. How so?
When my middle school and high school years were very difficult due to the fact that there was a lot of alcoholism and there was drug abuse in the house. And so there was a lot of negative energy. Looking back on it now and studying everything there, that house was very sad. I remember it being very sad. And just even when it was sunny, it was very sad. So I think that had a lot to do with it. But in 87, 88, when I was in high school, my father took a job at the newspaper in Japan. So he moved to Japan by himself. So my mother didn't want to stay in the master bedroom. So she went and slept on the couch downstairs and gave me the master bedroom upstairs. So it was almost like a nightly ritual that I would hear footsteps in that room, like just kind of walking up to the bed and saying, look, I could tell in my mind's eye that I could see these things. And they just kind of walk away. But it would be like an every night thing. Mm-hmm.
What's going through your mind at this point when you're having these the footsteps going through and obviously kind of an odd setup there where you're in what would be your parents' bedroom. Your dad goes to Japan for a job. It all just seems rather, you know, I mean, out of whack to a certain extent.
Yeah, it really does. It was just I was terrified, yeah. You know, at the beginning, because you could honestly, like, because the way the setup was is, you know, the bed was I guess if you're in like a standard bedroom, it was about 4 or 5 feet from the door. Mm-hmm. So if I turned over on my left side, it would, like, I could hear it walking up to me. So I never wanted to turn around because I was like, I don't think I want to see whatever this might be. Mm-hmm. But I could always hear that, and I'd always wake up thinking, what the hell was that, you know? And we had a little crawl space in there too. But I never helped, because that's where we, you know, kept like pictures and various things like that, and those are always creepy no matter what. But I was just like I don't know what this thing was, but it happened pretty much every night until I moved out of the house in the 90s.
Did you do any digging into this to try and figure out what was going on in this house?
Yeah, I did. I found out that nobody, there had only been like three owners. It was only about a 40-year-old house, as far as I could find, that no one died in it. And most of our relatives that had either never visited the house or were scattered across the country, so you know, nobody that I knew actually physically died in the house. And again, like, our relatives were all over, so I'm trying to think, okay, maybe this is grandma, but is it really? Because I don't know, because I could never find that out.
Mm-hmm. Just a mystery to you. So eventually you move out of the house and you begin your life as an adult and with a fascination for the paranormal. What ensues there?
Yes. Let me go back right before I moved out of the house, because this is one of the most profound effects that I think led me down this path to trying to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. Back in 94, spring of 94, you have to understand, with my brother and their friends and my mother and my friends, we always had, it was a kind of like Grand Central Station. So there was so much energy in that house that there was people coming in and out constantly. We just never seemed to be alone, so to speak. So I had actually moved in with a friend of mine that lived a couple streets over, just to kind of get some peace of mind and everything. So, but I'd gotten into the EVPs a little bit and tried to get some EVPs, and that didn't work. I'd actually gone to a local church cemetery and did my thing, and then that failed miserably, because I guess it was just whatever, wasn't time. But I decided, okay, there's nobody in the house right now, so I'm going to do an EVP session here. And I had one of those, I don't know if you remember them, back in the 80s, early 90s, they had there was the big boom boxes with the
sure,
the dual cassettes and the speakers that came unattached. Mm-hmm. Well, so I just said, okay, so I hit the record button and I said, if anybody's in here, please show me, and let the tape run. And I went over to my friend's house for about an hour and a half. So when I came back, I rewound the tape. And for the most part, there was nothing there but white noise. And I was like, okay, that's kind of what I expected. I said, geez, I didn't get anything. So about the last minute, minute and a half, 2 minutes, I hear a pounding on the radio, like someone's hitting it. And I'm like, what the hell is this? There's nobody in this house. So it continues, and I got a lot of loud whistles and beeps, and I was like, still, I don't know what that is. Then at the very end, it was like somebody had slowed it down, the tape all the way down. The voice came out and said, I have shown you, ha ha. And I fell out of my chair, about had a heart attack, and I was scared shitless, pardon my French.
But sure.
That really, I don't know what the hell, but whatever it was answered my question. And that's really what, after I got calmed down, of course, everybody thought I was crazy or on drugs, mm-hmm. that I told this to. But after that, that's really kind of what got me in motion here. Like, okay, what was that? Who was that? What the, you know, that did happen to me. I'm not crazy. I did hear this voice. So.
I got you. I showed you. What, I mean, what, I mean, I'm assuming it's almost referring to, hey, it showed itself to you, and that's what it's referencing in what it was saying. What did that effect, what sort of effect did that have on you in terms of wanting to do more EVP sessions or trying to reach out to the dead in some way, shape, or form going forward after that?
Well, quite honestly, that really kind of put it on a shelf for me, because that's frightened me so much, because I didn't understand what this could be, that I didn't do another EVP session for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. But in that time, I continually, you know, was still interested in the paranormal and finding out what was what. So I did continue to, you know, love a good ghost story and talk to people and this and that. But yeah, I didn't do EVPs for a long time because I wasn't sure what that was. And that really scared the hell out of me.
Sure. Well, that would scare the hell out of anyone. I mean, it's just, it's you know, it's not just a voice with a random word. It seems like there was a conscious entity that was communicating directly with you.
Yeah.
So obviously that was quite the scare. Continue on your story as far as what chronologically happened next in your life in terms of the paranormal.
Okay. Well, about 3 months following the EVP session, I had got accepted to a school in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania, to do communications, broadcasting specifically. So I had gone up there. It was about a 3.5-4 hour drive from Falls Church, Virginia. So beautiful town. And I took a summer course, and I believe it was called Burns Hall, and I have my book in front of me, so I think it is. That's actually where I stayed for that summer semester, and they had a huge cemetery, like almost abutting the hall. And I thought this was so cool. I was, oh my god, the cemetery's right here. People must see things or hear things all the time.
Sure.
So nothing really eventful happened. I was the only one on campus at the time because, again, summer session in a small town. So. Nothing really happened, but as I moved into my freshman and sophomore years, I would ask professors, you know, hey, what's going on? I said this, you know, this one hall is 1851. This thing's over 100 years old. There's got to be stuff going on. I was roadblocked every time. They either laughed me off or they wouldn't say anything, and I was just kind of like mystified, like, who can I talk to about this? Mm-hmm. But I've actually heard things. From other friends who would actually live in other dorms, they actually would report certain things. And, you know, and I just was like, okay, so this is academia. Thanks. You know?
Sure.
So I never got, and the reason I bring this up is that actually I was corresponding with a gentleman last year who had written a book about aliens and Bigfoot in Greene County where I went to school. And I told him, I said, hey, I got a book I'm coming out with that's takes place somewhere there, and it's got ghosts, and we both changed in stories, and he said the same thing about the faculty up there then, now actually stonewalled him as well. So it wasn't just me, it was current, you know, people didn't want anyone to know anything, I guess. So the first 2 years there were pretty uneventful. My junior year, I moved about a mile out of town in a little gray house with a roommate of mine who worked as a bartender. And, you know, the first couple weeks were very uneventful, and it was a really nice little house and everything. And then I'd start to hear things when I was by myself, because, you know, with him being a bartender, he'd work till 3-4 in the morning.
Sure.
So first it was things like cabinets rattling, cabinets opening up and closing, doors opening up and closing. And we had a side entrance. So he would come in. When he came in, he'd use that side entrance to come in from the outside. So that would open up and close every once in a while. Well, this one time I was like, oh, Brian must be home. So I waited about 10 minutes. I heard somebody go in the bathroom. So I figured it was him. It was, I don't know, maybe 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. I was thinking, I guess he must not have been working. So I didn't hear anything after that. And I was like, well, that's weird. I didn't hear anything. Let me go see. So I, you know, got up and the bathroom's through the kitchen. So I strolled through the kitchen to the bathroom. I knock on the door and call his name. There's no answer. I'm like, oh, shit, what happened? Maybe he's sick. So I open the door. He's not in there. I'm like, okay. So I go to his room. Same thing. And I was like, I know I didn't hear him come out of his room. So he wasn't there. So I'm like, okay, I know damn well I heard this door open and close. I heard people in this kitchen. I heard somebody close that bathroom door. But who are they and where are they?
Yeah.
So I just kind of, you know, shook it off and was like, okay, whatever. Well, things like this continually happened. So I had a good friend of mine that, every, you know, a couple weekends I'd go to stay with her and her family out of town, and Brian would be there by himself. And I think it was like early spring. I came in and we were sitting on the couch. It was like one of the first times we'd actually been together in a while. And he turns to me, he says, have you been hearing crazy shit in this house? And I just let out such a sigh of relief. I was like, oh my God, you hear it too? And we just sat down and just had a BS session for about an hour comparing notes. And we had basically been hearing the same things when neither one of us were here. And it was just the point where it was the doors slamming, the doors closing, the voices, things like that. So I had a friend of mine who was a medium. And I told her, I asked her, I said, hey, we don't know what's going on here. Can you come to the house and maybe give us an idea? And she said, yeah, not a problem. So she came in and she sat down for a while and she was reading the house and everything. And she said, you know, there's nothing to worry about. It's one of the older owners named George. He wants to make sure you guys are taking care of the place. He doesn't mean any harm. He's just saying, hey, I'm here. And I turned to her and said, well, can you kindly tell him to stop? Because he's scaring the hell out of us. And she was like, no, you're going to have to do that. I said, I don't understand what you mean. She said, no, you're going to have to tell him to do that and it will stop. And I, of course, at that time I didn't know much, so I felt like an idiot, you know, talking to the air.
Sure.
So I just went ahead and told him, I said, hey, George, you know, please, can you please stop doing that? I said, we're taking care of your house and this is ours now. And it stopped. And it was the craziest thing. And I was like, what? How can this be? You know, that may be, you know, and the thing with my friend, and she's in the book, her name's Cheryl. You know, one thing that she really did to blow me away is when I was in Virginia in my house during a break and she was in Pennsylvania, we were talking on the phone and she remote viewed my home. And that really, I mean, it wasn't just big, it was little things, insignificant things that there's no way you couldn't have known unless you were in my house, which you never had been. So I was like, wow, this is, you know, what's going on with this stuff? So I had her kind of teach me and then tell me a lot of stuff that she's gone through, because she's also a witch.
What was that the first, I mean, when you had something with an experience of remote viewing, that obviously is something where if the first time you're experiencing that or someone else is, you know, doing that with you, it can kind of blow you away. Tell me about that experience specifically and what was going through your mind.
Well, I got goosebumps, of course. Mm-hmm. That goes without saying. I almost dropped the phone because, like I said, and the thing that really got me is it wasn't so much, you know, because there were certain things that, you know, anybody can say, oh, you have a white wall or what. It was little things like we had at the side of the house. We used to have a little gate that wasn't even there anymore. And she described the gate. And she even told me, she said, there used to be a gate there. I don't think it's there anymore. And I was like, holy shit. You know, so we used to have a rose bush in the corner of the house that was no longer there. She described that. She described the crawl space, like in the room where I was talking to her. I was in that room with the footsteps, and she described this crawl space to me to a T. And she even said something. She was like, yeah, in the back corner, there's this. And I hadn't been back there in a long time. So I got a flashlight, and sure as shit, what she told me was there. And I was like, oh my God.
Sure.
So it both frightened me and also fascinated me to the point where, hey, I want to know more about this, because this is really something I've never experienced, and this is true. Because, you know, I'd seen the shows, and I'd heard the, you know, all the debunking things in certain times. And at that time in the 90s, I think, there were some people that were, well, of course, there was, what was her name? The Jamaican. Oh, God. What was her name?
Are you talking about the psychic?
Yes.
Cleo?
Yes. Cleo, yes, Miss Cleo, Carmen now, yes.
Yes, Miss so, Cleo.
You know, there was the decade infomercials and things like that, so.
Sure.
Again, there was just, I think, I want to say one of them actually had I think it was Sylvia Brown on it. And again, I was so new to these things that I was just like really fascinated. But again, it was one of those things where it was like anything else. Is she the real deal, or is she full of crap? But how does she know these things, and why? And that really kind of got me to the ball rolling on wanting to find out what exactly is going on.
So what did you do to continue trying to answer that question of what is going on?
As luck would have it, I guess, I don't know if it's luck or not, but me and Cheryl became an item, so we started dating, and I dated her for about 10 years, so we had a relationship for about, I'm still good friends with her. So basically, we kind of explored together, like, you know, I would, you know, do a lot of different things, like I would research, you know, stories, local stories, and haunts, and she would describe certain things that she would do, because she was very good with reading people. She was very good. She was a very good intuitive. And that was one thing that I also used to do. And in fairness to her, I shouldn't have done, is that I would start leaning on her for like, oh, hey, you know, I got this interview coming up. How's it going to go? And, you know, she would tell me and things like that. So it was just that. And I got to meet some people that were mutually interested in a lot of the paranormal stuff, too. And we were just kind of comparing notes and things like that, but basically everywhere we moved, it was something. There was some sort of haunting or something going on.
Sure. So as you continued to look into these things, and you're talking to a lot of people in the field and digging yourself deeper, tell me more about, you had mentioned something about an attachment and an encountering.
Oh, yes.
That.
Yes, there's actually two of them.
How did that come about?
The one was evil, the other one not so much.
Okay.
The first one, I'll go into that since it has to do with Cheryl. When we first started dating, my mother had passed by this time, and 97. So she had, you know, of course, I was really upset and distraught and all that. Well, she told me one day, she said, well, you know, I can bring her to you. And I was like, what the hell do you mean by that? I said, she's gone. And she said, no, I can channel her to you. And you can like talk to her and you can see her. And I was like, okay, well, I was still kind of like on the fence about all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But she did. It was a very windy March night, and she brought her to me. That was I saw my mother in my mind's eye, and I got to talk to her, and I felt her, and I felt so much better, and I knew it was my mother, and she told me it was going to be okay. And I thought, okay, that, you know, that's awesome. And I remember, you know, being very emotional and this and that. So it was about maybe a month later, we had a good friends of ours, a couple. We were at her friend's house, and her boyfriend at the time was skeptical. You know, there was nothing you could bring in that he would say that any of this exists or anything's real. He was just a staunch skeptic, and that was fine. So Cheryl said, okay, why don't we do a channeling session? And let me try and show you some stuff. And he was like, yeah, okay, we'll do whatever, and that's fine. So we did a channeling session, and towards the end of the channeling session, we all saw this, you know, I don't want to call it a demon, but it was a very evil-looking entity, whatever the hell it was. And we all saw it at the same time, and we all jerked back and ended the circle. because it all scared us because we weren't expecting this thing. Well, soon after, we all started having things happen to us, like bad things, like things would happen to us. My personality changed. I'm not saying that I was in the throes of oppression or anything, but my personality changed to the point where I could hear myself in my head telling me this wasn't me, but I couldn't do anything about it. I was depressed. I was angry. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I just basically shut myself off from anybody. And my friends also, he had a horrible motorcycle accident and ended up in the hospital. They broke up soon after that. You know, there was car troubles, housing troubles, you know, just anything. And it was just all these things. And we were just like, there's got to be something to all of this. So we went, I told Cher, I said, look, I said, I don't know what you can do, but you've got to do something. Because I think what we did really affected is affecting it. Well, she found out she didn't close the circle because we all basically stopped at the same time. So the circle of the portal was not closed. So this thing was able to run free. Mm-hmm. So she went in and went ahead and did that, and she closed it, and things got progressively better. But for a period of 3 or 4 weeks, it was just mayhem, and it was just awful. And this thing, you know, whatever it was, I've never seen it again, thank God. But it was just very unpleasant.
Elaborate on that to me about how it was unpleasant. What were some very specific things that it was doing that made you really want to get it out of your life?
Well, for me, like I said, I'm the kind of person who's very happy-go-lucky, you know, very, very loquacious, love to talk, love to cut up, things like that. You know, I had a lot of friends, whatever. Soon after this, I was like trying to cut myself off from everybody. I specifically remember a friend of mine calling on the phone and just mumbling some stupid stuff about, yeah, I don't really want you around or this and that, so I'll just talk to you later, and hanging up on her and unplugging the phone and sitting in the dark for like hours, just sitting in the dark. And I could just feel like I wasn't myself. I quit going to school. I was cutting class. I was just basically just, you know, drinking a lot, mm-hmm. you know, and that's something that, you know, that wasn't me. I mean, again, being a, you know, college kid and everything, but I noticed I've been drinking more than usual. But just my personality was just negative and just angry and just kind of numb. And I knew that wasn't me.
So this thing was really kind of changing who you were in terms of your outlook on life and your outlook on people and how it was affecting. So what did you do then to try and rid yourself of this attachment once you kind of realized, hey, I think we did something that brought this in?
Yeah, well, that's when I went to Cheryl and was like, look, you've got to do something about this. Mm-hmm. I said, because this is affecting, and it was affecting her too. She was going through a lot of stuff, and that's when she realized that she didn't close the portal and that we have to get in there and do this, or we're really going to be affected.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Kevin about living with ghosts. In part two, what kind of unpleasant things have attached to Kevin that made him believe whatever it was evil. Also, who was a positive attachment that came into Kevin's life? What did Kevin do when he woke up at 2 a.m. to hear Dixie being played alongside cannon fire near a historic battlefield? When Kevin began dating a woman with a very dark energy surrounding her, exactly how did it affect him? How did Kevin process the concept of seeing his first shadow person? And what kind of paranormal entities inhabit the residential treatment facility that Kevin works in today? All of that and more in part two of our interview. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.